find all the case information you need faster. Smart litigators rely on Bloomberg Law's broad litigation news coverage and our market-leading dockets. Now with AI-driven search and analytics, customized alerts, and expansive state court coverage. Visit pro.bloomberglaw.com for everything you need to win.
As Matthew Butterick stood at the entrance to the Hall of Justice, an ancient tribunal that applies the laws of our realm, he paused to gather his strength as he prepared to battle the forces of artificial intelligence.
Welcome back to Uncommon Law. I'm your host, Matthew Schwartz. And of course, you'll remember our artificial narrator, Daniel.
I am positively chuffed to reprise the role.
We are delighted to have you back. Last time, we learned how artificial intelligence language models work by ingesting billions of words to figure out how words and sentences and paragraphs fit together. We learned that by ingesting enough of these, programs like ChatGPT, when prompted, can create works of their own. And we learned about the lawsuit filed by Matthew Butterick against the creators of ChatGPT.
Butterick's foe, an artificial monster that feeds on human creativity, armed with a magical incantation that could let it continue its frenzied digital feast unimpeded, putting human creators at risk.
It's not just me and it's not just programmers. It's like this could be a much bigger kind of existential threat to a certain type of human creator.
Butterick is suing Meta, OpenAI, and others for what he says is blatant copyright infringement, the wholesale copying of hundreds of thousands of copyrighted books without permission in order to train the large language models that make this magical AI technology possible.
I felt a very strong sense that if I didn't put down my pencil and go do this, like I wasn't going to have anything to come back to.
Today, on Uncommon Law, is all of this copying illegal? Or do the AI companies have a defense?
Armed with a magical incantation
that could give them a pass to continue scraping up whatever content they want, copyright protected or not? And if so, what is the magical incantation they need to utter to invoke this defense? You remember Isaiah Poritz, our Bloomberg Law technology reporter?
Hello.
Hello. So Matthew Butterick's lawsuits have faced motions to dismiss, sort of the initial legal hurdle that you often face in court. And some of the counts have been thrown out, violations of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, something called vicarious copyright infringement. But the lawsuits are still there. And the main allegation, direct copyright infringement, is still in play, right?
Yeah. Their core theories, at least so far, seem to be holding water. And I think the argument that they went out and used this pirated book database to take all of those books and use it for the purpose of creating a chatbot that could, in theory, compete with the original works of the authors, I think that's a pretty succinct story of a copyright violation.
And yet, that's not the end of the story. Far from it. Because it turns out that copyright isn't absolute. Even if something is protected by copyright, the law provides exceptions and limitations, allowing for certain uses without permission, so that you can still make copies of it.
Yeah, the law calls this fair use.
There it is, the magical incantation.
Yeah.
Fair use. Okay, so what makes a use fair?
So everyone knows that if you create a painting of some sort, you know, that's yours, that you own the copyright to that. But it's really going to hurt the culture if nobody can touch that and nobody can even comment on it or remix it or take little bits of the painting here and there.
And the way we create our culture is basically by mixing all the earlier things that came before us until we've got the melting pot of America. And sometimes that melting pot might include a copyrighted work or two. You're allowed to talk about it. You're allowed to remix it.
Yeah. That's, I think, the ultimate purpose of the fair use doctrine. And if we live in a society where the moment you quote a couple of lines from Stephen King, he can sue you, then that's not going to move the culture forward.
So you're saying in some situations, I can take someone's work and then use it to help make my own work? Are you talking about like writing reviews of a book?
Sure. Yeah, that's called commentary or criticism, and it's a classic fair use. You know, like quoting an excerpt from a book to talk about that book. But there are plenty of other examples of fair use as well.
Like what?
Like a news reporter can usually excerpt copyrighted stuff if they're reporting on it, especially if it's factual information. Parodies are also another form of fair use. One famous example is when Two Live Crew did a parody of the song Pretty Woman. And the Supreme Court did a fair use analysis and decided that, quote, parody needs to mimic an original in order to make its point. If anything, I know the Two Live Crew version better than the original.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a whole other episode. But also, the reason we can play the audio of that song right now is because we are currently engaging in fair use. We're only using a few seconds and not the whole song, and there's an educational purpose. Two Live Crew's purpose was to entertain, while ours is to explain a legal concept.
Exactly. You can't talk about a copyrighted song without playing the song, really.
Well, you could, but it would make for a bad podcast. Pretty Woman. But Isaiah, all this fair use we're talking about right now, this seems pretty straightforward. Quoting a part of a copyrighted work to comment on it, or for news purposes, or to make a parody. But what the artificial intelligence companies are doing right now seems pretty different.
Yeah, totally.
So how does a judge analyze whether something in that context is a fair use?
Yeah. So the fair use doctrine, there's four factors that are outlined in the Copyright Act. And the first factor is the way that you're using the copy.
What does that mean?
If you're able to show that you made a copy, but then you transformed it, you had a transformative purpose for making that copy, then you can get away with that.
Transformative.
Transformative use is a concept that looms really large in fair use analysis.
This is Matthew Sagg. He's a law professor at Emory University Law School, and his areas of expertise are copyright and artificial intelligence. Isaiah, is it okay if we jump to another professor now?
Yeah, that's fine. Professor Sagg is really well known. He actually testified to Congress on AI and fair use.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify here today.
Wow.
I'm a professor of law in AI.
So a transformative use is where your whole point for making a copy is to take the copy and use it to create something that has a different purpose and a different character from the original work. You know, like the stuff we've been talking about, making a parody or making a mashup. So that's the question. Are the AI companies engaging in a transformative use?
Is it legitimate to take someone's copyrighted work without authorization in order to basically feed it into a computer when the output of the computer looks nothing like the copyrighted work? And that's a pretty important question. Since the rise of generative AI into the public consciousness, it's become a really important question.
And in Professor Sagg's opinion, when the AI companies are creating their large language models, they are absolutely making transformative use of the copyrighted materials.
The case in favor of fair use goes something like this. When we make a copy of someone else's copyrighted work just to learn from it and produce uncopyrightable abstractions or derive uncopyrightable information or make our own independent observations about the relationships between works, that is all something that is highly transformative. It just creates something entirely new. I think it's really useful to understand how really fundamentally limited the role of copying is in the sort of LLM production process. When you train a model, the best way to think of these models are as ridiculously long statistics equations, right? GPT-4 is really just a ridiculous piece of math with a trillion parameters.
But just to play devil's advocate, yes, the output of ChatGPT is created by throwing a trillion parameters into a ridiculously long equation, but those trillion parameters come from hundreds of thousands of copyrighted books and articles and screenplays and really any written word that's available digitally. Surely that is not a fair use.
I think maybe one way to understand it is, let's play a game. If I give you a phrase and you tell me what the missing word is. So the phrase is, the girl with the dark.
You want me to give you a word?
I do.
Okay. Eyes.
Right. Why did you say eyes? Is it because you read it somewhere and your brain stored a copy of it? Doesn't seem likely.
I mean, I could have said imagination or past, but I decided it probably applied to something physical about her, so I went with eyes.
Yeah. You know, I think those are pretty good guesses. I think propeller, semicolon, harmonica, those are like fantastically unlikely guesses, right? When we deconstruct your guess is informed by everything you've learned about the English language, about grammar, but also the things you've learned about society and the world. Like, you've learned something about the kind of things we observe, right? You didn't go with something abstract like her past or her demeanor. You went with a physical characteristic which, you know, says something about like the way we talk about young women in Western literature, right? It's not because you read the sentence somewhere and you copied it. It's because your brain has learned at a much more abstract level all of these things that help you make a good probability guess. The analogy between human learning and machine learning can be overdone, to be honest. But in this respect, it's quite true. Like, the training of the algorithm, the going from random weights to weights that are actually just astonishingly useful for predicting the next word, that is not a process of copying. That is a process of learning piece by piece, little by little, from the training data.
So, Isaiah.
Hi.
I think I get the argument. At a very basic level, yes, large language models have to copy data into their models in order to work. But they're just using that copy so they can teach computers how language works. And then when computers get a question, when you type something into ChatGPT, it's going to use all of that data, all of that content, and it's going to mix it all up like a digital word blender. And the milkshake that it pours out should be quite different from the copyrighted work that went in. And our copyright system treats these kinds of transformative works quite differently than someone who's just making a copy of someone else's work so that they can resell it. Did I get that right?
I think that's right, Matt. The basic argument that the AI companies are making is that scraping all this information and putting it into a training model is no different from my going to the library and reading all of the books in the library and then suddenly becoming a very smart person and having the ability to write cool novels, to do cool things, all in the same way that ChatGPT is blowing all of our minds. So they say, you know, that's not copyright infringement.
Okay, my next question. Is there any case law that backs this up?
Actually, there just might be. I talked with Mark Lemley. He's a professor at Stanford Law and an attorney who actually represents Meta and Stability AI in the copyright cases against them.
Yeah.
Oh, so like on the other side of Matthew Butterick.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a series of cases in which something similar happens, right? Which is I take all of your work and I make an intermediate use of it inside my company or inside my computer, but I use it to generate something that's new and different and non-infringing as output. So the Google book search case to me is the closest example.
The Google book search case.
There are a couple copyright cases that deal with ingesting a lot of data, but this one is probably the most on point when it comes to AI. In the early 2000s, Google develops its Google Books project, where it gets, ultimately, I think, millions of books, and it digitally scans those books without permission from any of the authors.
Just before 9 most mornings, a truck belonging to Google pulls up at the Stanford University Library.
I remember that.
Google's library project seeks to digitize books and make
20 million books and says it complies with copyright law.
As soon as the truck is empty, library workers load it up again with more books to digitize.
They were literally going into libraries and just scanning all the books so that they could make them searchable without permission or payment.
Without getting a license to do any of this. They upload it to a database, and what they allow people to do is they can't read entire books on that database, but what they can do is if you want to search for a particular phrase across millions of books over history, you can do that. If you want to find certain excerpts from the books, you can look at these small excerpts from it.
So Google made digital copies of copyrighted material, a bunch of books, but they only did that so that people could search them and view some snippets and analyze language trends over the decades. And that was a fair use?
The litigation lasted years, but eventually the courts found that, yes, this is a fair use because it's sufficiently transformative. Here's Mark Lemley.
The court says that's fair use because its purpose is different, right? The goal is not compete with the sale of these books, right? Provide these books without permission. The goal is make this new thing available.
Okay, tell me if I've got this right, Isaiah. Google was allowed to make copies of the books in order to let users search for information in the books, a new purpose, if you will, and that transformed the original work enough to be a fair use. Do I have that right?
Exactly, Matt.
So even though the whole book might be in there somewhere in the servers, a user can't actually access the whole book, only portions of it. And that is key to the fair use finding, because it's just a really small portion of the larger work?
That's right, Matt. And so the argument is that this isn't all that different when it comes to these generative AI models.
If the purpose is different, if my goal is actually to make something new, that all I'm doing is making an intermediate copy that enables me to achieve that purpose, that's a fair use.
So it looks like OpenAI and all the rest of the AI companies are going to be just fine. Join us next time when
Matt, we're not done yet.
We've spent so much time talking about how this use could be transformative. So I just assumed.
All of these sorts of fair use questions are very fact specific. And that's why I think it's going to be very difficult for, say, the Supreme Court to weigh in and say kind of universally, this is fair use or this is a violation of copyright. It always comes down to the specific details.
So no one knows for certain if this specific case, if generative AI's use of copyrighted content to create something new is in fact a fair use until a court rules on it?
Right. And fair use is a very complicated inquiry. The fourth factor of the test, for instance, looks at whether the use of the copyrighted work might end up affecting the market value for the original work.
What do you mean?
Well, it's one of the things all these authors are especially worried about. If someone can ask ChatGPT to write a book in the style of a certain author, say Stephen King, will that reduce the market for the author's work?
Okay, and that could affect the fair use analysis?
Absolutely.
Let me put it this way.
Oh, this is James Grimmelman. He's a law professor at Cornell Tech and Cornell University. You may remember him from the last episode.
You can imagine a spectrum here from somehow getting ChatGPT to give you the complete text of It.
The terror, which would not end for another 28 years, if it ever did end, began so far as
ChatGPT writing a new work in the style of Stephen King.
The day the fog rolled in from the sea, thick and unyielding, was the day the disappearances began, as if the town was being erased by an unseen hand.
To writing a new work of horror that competes with Stephen King and other authors.
Have you heard the echo of your name in an empty house? A voice that knows you too well, yet belongs to no one?
So first of all, I just want to point out that those last two examples were actually written by ChatGPT and voiced by an artificial narrator, which is insane if you think about how good this stuff is getting. But also, Professor, I think you're getting at why fair use has always been so fact-specific.
Yeah, I think that's my general attitude towards AI copyright, which is that there is a spectrum here. And if, depending on how you tweak the dials of a particular system, you can have things that are just straight up massive infringement databases. At the other extreme, you have things that are highly creative and draw almost not at all on copyrighted works. Somewhere in between, there are hard cases. But if you have a blanket rule that all generative AI is fine or all generative AI is infringing, you get the hard cases and the easy cases wrong.
To Matthew Butterick, one of the lawyers bringing the cases against the AI companies, fair use is not the magical incantation that some believe it to be. And it's a challenge he's willing to take on.
So fair use, it only takes you so far. As an attorney, I am trying to say, okay, the harm is happening now. What's important is that we get into court now, and we need to take the legal tools we've got and apply them. And hey, that's part of what being a lawyer means. Sometimes, you know, the way you want to use the law is exactly the way it's been used all along. Great. Sometimes you need to bend it a little bit to kind of get it to fit the current technology. And sometimes you got to bend it into, I don't know, more of a, probably some judge would say, well, that's a little, you broke it. You didn't really bend it. So, hey, but that's what it means to advance arguments.
Isaiah, we were almost done reporting this episode when something crazy happened at the end of 2023. The New York Times sued OpenAI for copyright infringement, like many others had done before, but this case was a little different.
Yeah, the New York Times brings this big lawsuit. It was a little bit annoying because I was hoping to have a pretty chill week between Christmas and New Year's, but they file this pretty groundbreaking lawsuit. Unlike the previous cases, the New York Times was able to show that the latest model of ChatGPT, ChatGPT-4, could produce almost verbatim text of copyrighted New York Times articles, which none of the previous cases were able to show.
So the copy that went in was the copy that came out?
Yeah.
Well, so much for the idea that the use was transformative, right? There goes any argument about a new purpose or character or not competing with the original.
Yeah. This is definitely going to throw a wrench into the fair use defense. Because again, the previous argument was, we're taking all this content and we're going to create something entirely new. The AI model learns, you know, abstract relationships between words.
Right, not actual copies of the articles themselves. So how did the Times get ChatGPT to do this?
The New York Times didn't use a super advanced technique, but what they did was they basically gave ChatGPT the URL to the original article and then gave it the first couple of sentences or first couple of paragraphs and basically said, hey, ChatGPT, fill in the rest of this. And it was able to sort of go through and produce the rest of the article.
So they're hacking the system.
They're hacking the system.
They're using it in a way that maybe it wasn't designed to be used.
Yeah, or in a way that an ordinary user, everyday user, probably wouldn't be doing.
I talked with a couple professors and they told me, you know, it's not supposed to memorize text. If it does memorize, that's a bug. That's not how this stuff is supposed to work.
Yeah, if you're able to show that direct copying on the output side, even the legal experts who are sort of more on the belief that these AI companies are within the fair use standards, even they said, you know, this is pretty damning evidence. Like Matthew Sagg, who you spoke with, very much on the side of this is probably all fair use. You know, he said this is a really well-written complaint from the New York Times, and it's gonna be tough for OpenAI to defend this.
In a statement, OpenAI said that memorization, or regurgitation, is, quote, a rare failure of the learning process that they're working on eliminating. But they added, we also expect our users to act responsibly. Intentionally manipulating our models to regurgitate is not an appropriate use of our technology and is against our terms of use. Let's see if those terms protect them in court. Isaiah Poritz, technology and AI reporter for Bloomberg Law, thank you so much for helping us understand all this stuff.
Thank you for having me.
Next time, is there anyone who can provide some guidance on the interaction between copyright law and artificial intelligence?
Can you just tell me your name so I can test the microphone here?
Shira Perlmutter.
I sit down with the Register of the Copyright Office, Shira Perlmutter, to discuss the future.
You have to have an appreciable amount of human authorship to have copyright. And the question will be, in each case, does that exist?
That's next time on Uncommon Law. Uncommon Law was produced and hosted by me, Matthew Schwartz. I also did the sound design for this episode. My editor is Josh Block, who is the executive producer for videos and podcasts here at Bloomberg Industry Group. Our cover art is by Jonathan Hortarte. Special thanks to Isaiah Poritz for his help on this episode. And an additional thank you to Adam Taylor, Joel Meyer, Tom Taylor, and Cheska Antonelli. If you liked this show, please tell a friend and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps spread the word. See you next time.
Smart litigators find winning arguments faster with Bloomberg Law. Our market-leading docket coverage has AI-driven search and analytics, customized alerts, and expanded state court coverage. And that's not all. Visit pro.bloomberglaw.com for everything you need to win.